Lawrence Ubell joins me now, half of the father-son gurus of how-to team, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Larry.
How you doing today?
I'm okay. And your father is in Texas?
Yes, he's in Texas. He's doing some expert testimony on a stair matter where someone had an accident because of some poorly constructed steps. And they had to get some outside counsel because it was difficult for them to find, not counsel, actually, outside expert, because the experts down there didn't want to testify in this particular case, some insurance issue or something like that. So we're going from New York, and we're fine by that. Unfortunately, you can't be here today.
Well, you have proved capable on your solo efforts.
Well, don't tell my dad that.
And before we even start, I should give out the phone number. It's 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. When you come here with your dad, we usually have a little quiz. Are we going to have a quiz today?
Yes, we are. And for those of you who don't know, we do the quiz. And if you get this right, you call in, you get a copy of Save Money, Save Energy by Al Ubell and George Merlis. And for today, we're going to go, for those of you who remember clotheslines for drying clothes that have a pulley at each end, inside each pulley there's a wheel. What is the name of the wheel?
Gee, we had a clothesline when I was a kid. I remember it squeaked.
Called it. Because that
but
wheel.
But I never knew the name.
Of the wheel.
Yeah.
The whole thing is called the pulley, and we all know block and tackle. And even in block and tackle, that wheel is still called the same thing. So it's the wheel inside that pulley that we're looking for the name of.
Okay. Our number here is 212-433-9692. Before we get going with the calls, this is an interesting time of year because we're not yet into spring, but well, today is a really pleasant day. Should we start doing things a little differently?
Well, what we really should start doing right now, and actually I'm even doing it, I'm actually taking my own advice, is getting the things ready or installed that we need for the summer. For instance, right now I have air conditioning people installing ductwork and refrigerant lines and all sorts of things so I can finally have central air conditioning in my house. Do not get this idea when all of a sudden the weather starts getting warm, because by then all the air conditioning people are servicing the people who already have the systems in. They're certainly not going to start installing systems in the summer. Also,
because it's so time-consuming.
It's time-consuming, but they're busy doing the service calls and keeping the systems running. Right now, no one cares if their system's running because we don't need it yet. Having someone work on your house and crawling around an attic space in the middle of the summer is a good way to kill them. I mean, I know that my attic space and many others can get upwards of 130 to 140 degrees. No one's going to be working up there in the summertime. So now is the perfect time for them to do this type of work, because they do get hot working, but it's cool up there and I'm not going to say it's pleasant, but it's not as bad. And now's the time to do that, whether it's air conditioning, whether it's cleaning out the gutters and leaders from the winter time, whether it's doing any of that type of work. And on the flip side of that, the summertime is the best time to call up your heating people, because that's when they're really not that busy. So it's good to have that kind of work done then.
Should we take some calls?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, our first caller is Jamie from Rockland County. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? I have a problem with my garage floor. I live in a ranch.
Mm-hmm.
The basement is dry as a bone. It's half finished and half workshop. And then on the other side of the wall is the garage. It's all the same slab. But the floor in the base in the garage is disintegrating. It's just literally coming apart in dust and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it's caused. I never see any big, wet spot or anything.
Let me ask you a question. Do you park your car in the garage?
Yeah, we park the car.
Okay. What's happened is probably early on. Now, were you the first owner for this building?
Second owner.
Probably either one of two things had occurred. The first, which comes to mind, is that You never get salt on the floor anywhere else in the basement except for the garage, because when we drive our cars in when they're full of snow or full of salty water from the roads, you park it there, and the salt can deteriorate the concrete, especially if the concrete was an excessively wet mix when they put it in. Why it would be a wet mix is that concrete guys, masons, it's easier to push around a wet mix to make it smooth, and you won't realize a problem until many years later, as you're kind of experiencing. So it's a combination of both the salt coming off your car and a poor quality mix that was installed. And the only way to repair that is to actually break up the old concrete and put new concrete in. But this time, you really want to – I know this sounds odd, but during the first winter, you really want to protect the concrete by putting plastic down and driving your car on top of plastic to protect it from the salt.
Okay.
And that's what's going on, unfortunately. How old is this building again?
I'm sorry?
How old is this building?
I've been there for 16 years, and probably in the
70s. You know. The 70s, yeah. A lot of construction boom. A lot of concrete had to go in quickly, and a lot of times they poured wetter mixes, and that's what occurs.
Thank you so much for your call. We go now to Carol from Manhattan. Hi, Carol. You're on the air.
What's up?
Yes. I bought a new sofa from Bloomingdale's a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
That's what I was about to say.
Well,
I hope you got it on sale at least.
It was.
Okay.
It was a floor model.
Okay.
And so this is what I'm getting to. Anyway, it was too big for the elevator, so someone had to take it apart and then bring it in. It was too big for the service cell. We got through that, and that was okay. That was like one thing. Then what happened is after my cat went on the sofa a few times, he didn't really do anything to it, but I realized, oh, my goodness, this sofa hasn't been treated. It wasn't treated with Scotchgard or anything. So, and it's a red velvet with some flicks of gold. Sounds bad, but it's pretty.
Yeah, okay, I'll go with you on that one. Go on.
And so now, what is there any way, is there anybody who can come in and treat it? I'm afraid to go out and get Scotchgard and spray.
Well, I'm sure there are companies that actually will treat the fabric.
Uh-huh.
And you're pretty sure that the fabric hasn't been treated prior to this.
You know, I called them up in North Carolina, and they said, we don't do that, and the stores will do that. Mm-hmm. But they evidently didn't do it because my quilt on my bed, you know, when you put some water on it, just sits there.
Mm-hmm.
When you put some water on the sofa, it goes in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I have a lot of mixed feelings about Scotch guarding things, especially, you know, nice fabrics and like that, because on the other hand, you know, you're buying this really nice fabric. On the other hand, Scotch guarding, it will change the way the fabric feels. Mm-hmm. And what's going on now, if your cat doesn't, I have a couple of cats too, and one of the problems is not of them going on anything, mm-hmm. but of them, you know, just leaving their fur all over the place, which Scotchgard is not going to help at all anyway. The other issue is people spilling stuff on it, and if that's a concern, then you definitely should, you know, definitely should do that. If you do the Scotchgarding yourself, you definitely want to ventilate the room when you're doing
yeah.
it. And the way you do that is actually just put a fan at the window and have it blow out, and that would take care of that. I'm not that much of an expert, I must admit, on Scotch guarding and that sort of thing, so I'm going to kind of defer that to people who know about that. But I definitely think that, you know, it really has to do with your lifestyle. If you don't spill a lot of stuff, I don't see the purpose.
The real problem, it seems to me, is that she's got a cat and she's got a velvet sofa. And there are things you can do to prevent the cat from going on the sofa, then there are people who will tell you how to do that.
Right.
But that seems to me to be the big thing. If the cat starts
clawing, sticking
its claw
and
into velvet, and velvet is such an invitation.
Tell me about it. You should see one of my carpet areas because, like I said, I have two cats. And also, Scotchgard is not going to prevent that. And if anything, it might actually be worse for the cat.
Thank you so much for calling us, Carol. This is the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC 93.9 AM 820 and online at WNYC.org. By the way, we are now podcast the complete show.
Oh, excellent.
And Lawrence Ubell, one of the gurus of how to, is with us today, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Ruth from Queens, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
What's up, Ruth?
I have a question about insulating. Mm. I live in a frame house that was built in 1923.
Okay.
I know that I heat the outside. And,
that's a good way of putting it.
There aren't any stray cats around anymore to benefit, which is too bad. At least it used to be that there would be some beings benefiting.
Yeah.
And I've talked to a weatherization place about, and they talked about shooting insulation into my walls.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple of questions about it. You know, one was just with the, I mean, the walls are old and do have, you know, some cracks. It would it compromise the walls? Would it be dangerous to the wiring? And also, they insist that they have to do it from the inside.
Right.
And I'm very concerned. I'm highly allergic and sensitive. I mean, you mentioned it. I sneeze. So
mm-hmm.
those are all of my...
Let me ask you a couple...
Wait, I want to see if you sneeze if I mention something.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Is the attic insulated?
The attic is somewhat insulated.
Okay. What I would do is... Because, you know, information shows us from... data that we've collected, and I don't mean I mean the industry,
right.
that you only really gain 25% of, you know, you'll improve your heating cost by 25% if you insulate the walls.
Uh-huh.
But if you insulate the attic properly or the roof cavity properly, you can gain anywhere between 40 and 50%. The cost difference between insulating an attic space and insulating a wall cavity is dramatic. I
right.
mean, attic spaces are way less expensive to insulate, so you'll probably realize the savings much quicker. What is the exterior surface of your building?
Well, it's a frame house.
Yes.
That was covered with a roofing material.
Okay.
I mean, with like strips of a roofing material.
Yeah, I understand. You have an asphalt exterior. What I'm saying is that what you might want to do is consider a new alternative exterior siding and then have the insulation put on the outside. For instance, if you were going with vinyl or aluminum, which you can't find aluminum much, but vinyl or some other polymer type exterior siding, they'll put styrofoam insulation between
right.
the existing layer and the new layer. That will give you an R value that would improve it, but you're already doing something else that's not going to add that much cost to that thing to that siding improvement that you're doing. Or you can actually put up another exterior type of siding, whether it's wood or wood siding or what have you, and that would get your some improvement. But if you just did the attic properly and fully and got yourself between 9 and 12 inches of insulation, fiberglass insulation up there, you would definitely improve. And I would do that first and see how you get see what realization you have in your energy savings.
Thank you so much.
And that's what I would do.
Thank you for calling us, Ruth. Alan from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi there.
What's up, Alan?
I have possessed radiators.
Recessed.
Possessed. Like by the devil.
Okay, got me there.
I'm in an apartment building in Brooklyn.
Can you exercise radiators?
That's what I'm calling about. Mm-hmm. I looked on all of them for, like, you know, dials or, you know, something that I can turn to adjust things.
Yeah.
And can't find them, or if there is one, it doesn't work at all. It doesn't do anything. My bathroom radiator, which sits right next to the toilet, spits hot water.
Okay. First of all, obviously, if your radiator is spitting, you obviously have a steam system.
Yes.
Okay. The one in the bathroom, because you can't have it spitting hot water because it can get burnt.
I've got two window screens layered in front of it.
Okay. What you need to do, I don't know if this is a home repair project for you or it's something that your super has to do, but what you do is you shut off the radiator,
uh-huh.
make sure the radiator cools down, and you replace the air vent.
Uh-huh.
That's all you need to do. That'll fix that problem. That air vent is broken, and that's why it's spitting out water.
Yeah.
Also, remember that the intake valves, the inlet valves, or the shutoff valves, whatever you call them, have to either be all the way open or all the way closed. Halfway does not work on one-pipe steam systems.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing, as far as regulation, there's a company called Danforth,
mm-hmm.
and that's spelled D-A-N-F-O-R-T-H. FOSS. And you can look on their website, and they make a thermostatically controlled valve, either in as an intake valve or as an air vent valve that will adjust depending on the interior room temperature. And you can adjust it that way so you can actually control. Now, realize that this valve will only work if the steam is already coming up. If they're not supplying steam, it doesn't matter what the valve says.
Oh, they supply steam like crazy.
I know. It's New York. Trust me. You know, it's funny. I've said this before, but I was at a convention in California of American Society of Home Inspectors, and I heard something I never heard. You know what a New York City thermostat is? It's a window. Okay? That's how you adjust the temperatures, by opening and closing your window, which when I see an open window in an apartment building, I just see money flying out. And so obviously, the building has to be balanced and adjusted, but this is a way for you to – is this co-op or a co-op?
It's a rental building.
It's a rental building. It's surprising they're giving you so much heat, because usually in rental buildings, the guys tend to be a little cheaper.
Oh, no. It's hateful.
Okay.
And there's another one, like the kitchen one, literally sounds like someone's trying to break through the wall.
Right, you have banging, and what you have to do is you have a shutoff valve at one end, and you have an air vent at the other. What you have to do is get what works the best is wooden checker pieces, but you can't find wooden checker pieces anymore because they're all made of plastic. So you got to get little wooden shims or something and pick up the end of the radiator where the vent is so the water can run back to the valve. And also make sure, again, I'm repeating myself, that the valve is either all the way open or all the way closed. If you try these three things, maybe you'll get something. Maybe it'll start working.
Thank you so much for calling us. We have to take a little break. And when we come back, we will take more of your calls for Lawrence U. Bell, the guru of how-to, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. And also, we're going to see if somebody's got the right answer for the quiz. And we'll do all of that right after this. We're back with Alvin U. Bell, one of the gurus of how to. And Alvin, you issued this challenge to our listeners to give us the name of the wheel that is in the clothesline for drying clothes. People remember them. There may even be some out there in backyards, the ones that have pulleys on each end. Inside each pulley, there's a wheel, and we want the name of that wheel. And let's go to some of the calls.
But before we answer, Alvin can't answer this one.
He can't answer this. He doesn't know the answer?
No, Alvin's not here. I'm Lawrence.
Did I say Alvin?
Twice.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I love it. It's a compliment. I'll take it as a compliment.
I know the difference between the two of you. Carlo from Manhattan. Hi, Carlo. What do you think it is?
Hi, guys. I have a vivid memory of my mother hanging out the window in the 50s, putting the clothes out there with the clothespins, and the wheel would squeak every time she
pushed. Yeah, and it was dangerous. I was always afraid my mother was going to fall out the window.
I wonder how many women did fall out of windows because of this.
Well, anyway, my guess, and I don't know, I'm not sure, but I think it's called a flywheel.
No, the flywheel is the part on your engine that's connected to the clutch, and it gives the engine the inertia to keep spinning.
And don't hang your clothes on into your car. Peter from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, yeah. Peter.
Hi, how are you?
What do you think?
Trolley.
That's fun.
Yeah, but no.
Thank you anyway. Judy from Brooklyn, hi, what do you think it is?
Hi, how are you doing, Lawrence? And how are you doing, Leonard?
Oh, we're doing
great.
Well.
Good. I think it's called a sheave. Or
what was the other one you were going to call it, even though you already won?
Or it can be pronounced shiv.
Right, shiv. But shiv has such negative connotations of prison and that sort of thing. So we called it a sheave. How'd you know that?
I looked it up in the dictionary.
Well, there you go, using books.
Is that cheating?
There you go, using books. We don't believe in books.
I love books.
Well, we're going to give you some books, right?
Great.
Yes, we're going to give you Save Money, Save Energy by Alvin U. Bell and George Merlis.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Okay, so why don't you hang on and give them your information. We'll send you an autographed copy.
Okay. I'm going to put you on hold. My producer will talk to you.
Thank you.
And by, before we go to some more of the calls, we also have been getting things on our comment line. And here's a question that I just thought I would throw in. This person writes, I just bought a house with a deck that's perhaps 15 years old. It's still in good shape, but the finish is fading, and I'm wondering how to best preserve it. Is it true that urethane is a bad idea for preserving a deck? If so, what do you recommend treating it with, and how long can I expect a deck to last?
Okay, first of all, yes, I agree with you. Polyurethaning an exterior wood deck is a bad idea because the water gets trapped underneath and causes more problems. Now, hopefully this deck is a pressure-treated lumber that has preservatives put into it. My feeling is one of two things. Either you can brighten it up by using a mild bleach solution on the wood, and that will brighten up the whole look of it. Or you can actually, once you clean the deck off, then you could stain it with an oil-based stain and have that color come in. But the stain should not have polyurethane in it. That's sometimes hard to find, so you have to look around. You don't want a preservative. You just want a pure oil stain to put in. Just remember when you're working with the stain that you actually wear gloves, because else you'll end up staining your hands the same color as the deck. But really, pressure-treated lumber decks don't really need a whole lot of preservative. And when they deteriorate, and you replace those planks as necessary.
Thank you so much for sending that in. We go now to David from Manhattan. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi, David.
Good afternoon.
What's up?
I had an incident where basically the joint between the tub and the wall needed to be regrouted. And in the interim, it caused leakage into the apartment below, into the ceiling of the bathroom of the apartment below. Now, the one.
Can I ask you a couple questions first?
Yes, please.
Okay. First of all, how many tiles were missing?
There were no tiles missing. It's a 70-year-old building, and basically, the settlement of the tub caused the joint.
Right. What happened was, because you know there's a lip on the edge of the tub that receives the tile, so the water can't flow up over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, this actually leads me to believe if the tub did settle like that, what are they doing to remedy the tub to stop the tub from settling more?
Well, actually, they've done nothing, and there were problems before where there was a break.
Mm-hmm.
Was a break in the waistline, you know, in what went from the tub drain to the waste deck, and they had to go into the ceiling of my downstairs neighbor's apartment and basically replace that piping.
But let me ask you a question. Is this a rental or co-op or a condo?
It's a co-op.
I think that this is a structural issue that needs to be addressed by the building. It's probably a wood frame building, I mean, at least a wood floor system building, where you have either something that cracked or has been there for so many years has rotted, and now the tub is starting to... I mean, the tub, when you fill a tub up with water like that, it's got to weigh about 500, 600, 700 pounds, especially, you know, when you sit in it and so on, or take a shower. So this is an issue that really needs to be addressed.
Are you suggesting I've been putting on weight?
No.
Oh, okay.
If anything, the opposite. You're looking quite good these days, I must say. You could see that on the radio.
700 pounds. No, anyway, that's with the water.
With the water and the tub. The tub itself could weigh at least 200-300 pounds. So what I'm, especially if it's a 6-foot tub, some of these older tubs are quite large, that there's really an underlying structural issue here that needs to be addressed. And I think that, I know this sounds really somewhat Machiavellian, but by doing nothing and creating more of a problem for your neighbor downstairs, it may spur them to make them actually fix the problem that you're having, which is basically a structural issue, which should be a building issue because, again, it's beyond the paint. It's something that needs to be addressed. And if a tub is moving southward or downward like that, then this is an issue that needs to be addressed before this tub ends up in your neighbor's apartment.
Thank you so much for calling us, David.
So definitely talk to the management and the co-op board on this one.
Bob from Park Slope. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have some questions about...
Let me just say one thing. And grouting and keep caulking is not going to fix the problem.
Yeah.
You can grout and caulk all you want, and that may actually temporarily fix that tub problem, but that tub still may end up in the neighbor's apartment. Go on. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I have a question about old lathe plaster, specifically wooden plaster from the 19th century that has wood lathe.
Yeah.
You know, when you have plaster people come in to look at an old ceiling, you get You have five come in, they give you five different opinions.
Right.
So,
and you're probably going to get a sixth one after we're done with this conversation, but go on.
Say it again?
You'll probably get a sixth opinion once we're done with this conversation.
So, okay, so cracks where there is not a variation in either side of the crack tend not to bother me too much. If you have a crack that's open,
mm-hmm.
because one side is up and the other side is down, then I know that's a danger.
Right.
What about the use of plaster washers? You see them advertised.
Right.
Some people tell me don't use them. For instance, I have a medallion that's showing a crack on one side.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's usually the wood lathe, not the chemical bond that's breaking.
Right. Well, actually, a couple of things is going on. So you have, for those people who don't visually have an idea of what's going on, it's also, we call it lath also. These lath pieces are about inch and a quarter by about a quarter inch thick, and they're nailed up with tiny little brads, inches, nails that are maybe only about an inch long, and they're nailed up with about a quarter inch to 3/8 inch spaces between it, and we lay up a scratch coat where it squeezes through in the finger and it holds on to this lath. The problem is a couple of things. One is the fingers are breaking off of the scratch coat, and that creates a deviation and kind of settles downward, especially on ceilings. But the more prevalent thing that happens also is the nails, the little brads that are nailed up there, the wood has dried out and shrunk, and therefore the nails are now loose. So there's really nothing holding it on. And so by putting up those washers, especially if you happen to hit the joists, would be a good thing. And I think that would actually work pretty well.
So I don't have to worry about cracking the plaster?
No, not at all.
And if you would pre-drill a hole and then...
That would be a great idea to pre-drill. That way you would do less damage, because smacking around with a hammer is definitely going to cause more damage. But the other thing that people do is they do make, I think Hewitt's Gypsum makes a lightweight drywall that you can put under or over, but under is really technically correct, and with long drywall screws, pull everything back up and now have a new surface. Now, obviously, if you have trim, you know, decorative crown moldings, medallions, like you were saying, then you have to kind of use your, you know, think outside the box and how to incorporate this new drywall to work with that old trim. And there are ways you can do it and create a new detail or profile at those areas. But if you... The cracks, like you said, are not a big deal. But if you see places where you have a differential in a crack, then you definitely have a piece that's loose. And what not maybe in your case, but in most cases where I do inspections, is that people, when they have a crack, will put up new spackle or new joint compound. And what they're doing is, here we have a compromised structure, and now they're adding more weight to this compromised structure. And guess what happens? The whole ceiling falls down. So that's what I would – definitely the washers I have no problem with, new sheetrock. And then there's also the ultimate, which is removing all the plaster altogether
and
re-sheetrocking the ceiling.
Thank you so much for calling us. Jackie from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the
Jackie, air. I want to say one last thing about drywall. If you want it to feel like plaster, do a double layer of sheetrock, and it'll really feel like plaster. Go on, Jackie.
Hi, I live on the first floor of a tiny wee East Village apartment that gets no light.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about attaching a mirror to the fire escape, which is in the back of the building, but not obviously rendering a fire hazard. I would attach it so that people could still walk up and down the stairs.
You can't do it.
It's
illegal.
Legal?
It's illegal to have your air conditioning unit sticking out into the fire escape. It's illegal to put your plants on the fire escape, and it's illegal to attach anything to a fire escape, whether it's Christmas lights, whether it's anything. That is like an off-limit zone for everything. Now, on the other hand, you could attach a bracket to the outside of the building, which is independent of the fire escape, and attach your mirror to get some light in that way. That wouldn't be a bad idea. Also, to get some light, you don't necessarily have to do a mirror. You can actually do a – I would actually, since you not really need – you actually, a mirror probably wouldn't be as good as probably getting a piece of wood or some kind of exterior gray wood and painting it with silver paint. That way it won't crack, which is definitely going to happen with a mirror. Or you could paint it with white paint, reflective white paint. And that way you would get the reflection into the room, but without having the problem of breaking glass.
Oh, and so would I need the wood to be concave?
No, it could be just flat. Have you ever watched the way when they do photo shoots and they hold up the foam core to get the light onto the model?
Yeah.
What do you think they're doing? That's all. It's just, and they make those, they make foam core in white. They make it in silver. They actually make it in gold if you want that kind
of. Foam core would probably crumble in the first rain.
But I'm using, let's use the concept as opposed to, you know, that actual material. I agree with you 100%. But an exterior grade plywood, you know, a half inch or 3/8 inch plywood on some brackets, that would do the trick. And you, let's get rid of that whole glass kind of thing. But you're not allowed to touch the fire escape.
Thank you so much for calling us. Kathy from Wyckoff, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, hi, Leonard. Hi, Lawrence. I love your show, Leonard, by the way. Listen
Thank
all the
you
time.
So
you know,
much.
I do too. So that makes two of us. And even when I'm not on, I love it.
my question is, I have a house.
Yes.
And one day I was in the basement. It's unfinished, cinder block walls.
Okay.
And I saw this thing. It almost looked like mold growing on it. And when I got up close and touched it, it was really like a powder.
White? What color?
It was kind of a whitish gray.
Yeah, it's not mold. Mold's black.
Yeah, that's what. It was clear. I mean, it was like a powder. It wasn't like a mold. And I did some research, and I think it's efflorescence.
It's exactly what it is.
My question is,
how to get rid of it?
How do I get rid of it? And also, is it undermining the integrity of my cinder block?
No, that's okay. Let me answer the second question first. No. What is it causing it? It's moisture from outside the building coming in because the relative humidity in the basement is way lower than that of the soil outside the building. So moisture, you always want to achieve its own level, and it goes from more moisture to less moisture. So that's what's happening. And when it's coming through the foundation, it's dragging the lime and salt deposits with it. As far as cleaning it up, you could use muriatic acid, which is somewhat, you know, it could be somewhat toxic. And if you wear rubber gloves and you're careful, you can clean it all up. But it will come back. But it's not doing any damage, and it's just an annoyance. And you see it all the time on the highways also, where you see these brick retaining walls, and you see the white marks all over the retaining wall. That's what that is. So it's really not a bad thing.
Now, we have very little time, and I think we may be able to sneak one more call in. But for all those people who are not getting on the air but have important questions.
And I got through most of mine last month.
They can email you, larry@ubell.com.
larry@ubell.com.
But they should put a phone number in.
Definitely put a phone number in, because I may call you and it will go way quicker.
And we have one last call. You have to make it very quick. This is from Philadelphia. Eric.
Hello.
Hi, Eric.
Hi, how are you?
How are things in Philadelphia?
I'm sorry?
Nothing. You're calling from Philadelphia?
What's up?
Yes, I have a brick house that last time it rained, which was this weekend,
mm-hmm.
there was like a huge amount of water coming in from the upstairs the molding on top of the window, but it was downstairs. And the next day I tried pouring water over the brick from a hose, and I couldn't get the water to come back. But the day before, it was just pouring out of there.
Do you have an air conditioner in that window?
No, I don't.
It was because it seems to me that the water might be coming in from above the okay, it's coming in from a window, the floor below. It might be coming in from the lintel above that window that you're thinking is the culprit. So you might have to try running water above it. I have to tell you that doing a telephone diagnosis on this one is difficult, because you really have to see there, touch it, feel it, and really observe what's going on there. We've run out of time. But if you want to send me an email. We could talk more about it.
He could send you a picture as well, can't he?
Picture, yeah. For those people who want to send me emails, pictures are really welcome.
And Lawrence Ubell visits us once a month, often with his father,
mm-hmm.
Alvin Ubell, to what?
To go forth, fix, save money, and do it safely.
Could cancer be contagious? Well, on tomorrow's show, we'll hear new evidence that suggests some types of cancer can spread from one person to another. Also, States of the Union is all about Delaware. Then, a look at the Teapot Dome scandal of 1922, a federal corruption disaster under Warren G. Harding, widely considered one of the worst presidents in American history, plus our latest underreported. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Sarah English, and Scott Goldberg. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Stephen Valentino, Samantha Morgenstern, and contributing producer Virginia Doris. Jay Cout was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.